It's Friday, September 2nd, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, should human rights issues be included in the upcoming G20 summit hosted by China? A president is impeached and a new leader takes over in Brazil.
For those here illegally today who are seeking legal status, they will have one route and one route only.
U.S. presidential politics shifts back to immigration. Also ahead, legal charges against a popular entertainer. It's all on today's International Edition. China has big ambitions as it hosts this year's Group of 20 Nations Leaders Summit in Hangzhou, beginning Sunday. It's aiming to put its stamp on the global body by forging a new economic model by promoting innovation. But the country's questionable track record on innovation and persistent obstacles to foreign investment may make it difficult for Beijing to push forward with the important and much-needed effort, according to analysts. The G20 held its inaugural summit in 2008 during the global financial crisis. The meeting was set up to help coordinate global trade and financial policy and give emerging countries a bigger say in that discussion. And since that crisis hit, China has risen to become the world's second largest economy and is a growing source of global investment, even as it struggles with slowing economic growth. Meanwhile, human rights activists are urging U.S. President Barack Obama to put China's rights record high on the agenda of his upcoming meetings with Chinese President Xi Jinping. The two leaders will be holding one-on-one talks on the sidelines of the G20 summit. In previous talks, Mr. Obama has repeatedly spoken to Xi about U.S. concerns with perceived human rights abuses in China. One group that hopes he will do so again is U.S.-based Human Rights First. My colleague Michael Lippin spoke on the phone with the group's senior counsel for foreign affairs, Daphne Evyatar, in New York for his VOA China 360 podcast. And he asked Evyatar what she thinks of how Mr. Obama has handled recent Chinese moves, such as Beijing's detentions of human rights defenders and its passage of a law restricting the activities of foreign NGOs.
The administration has made a few statements. John Kerry, certainly when he was in China, made some statements about the NGO law and raised some concerns. But none of these have been very strong, and we haven't seen any actual actions that seem to have made a difference. I mean, it is helpful. There was a joint statement issued by a group of countries a few months ago about China, and I think those kind of joint actions are helpful, and we are encouraging President Obama to work with other G20 countries to raise these issues. But we'd like to see something more because the trend seems to be accelerating. The human rights situation seems to be getting worse. There's a lot of concern among people locally that in advance of the G20 meeting, people are being rounded up and expelled from Hangzhou, and that people will be at risk, even at a greater level of risk, because of the meeting. And so it's important for President Obama to really make a very public statement about the fact that this is not acceptable, and also to make an effort to meet with local civil society when he's there. It's difficult because there are some people who probably would be afraid to meet with him just because of security concerns, but there are others that I think probably would be willing to take that risk, and he should at least make that effort because it makes a big statement of support for human rights activists there.
Why do you think President Obama hasn't, up to now, been tougher with China and made these more kind of explicit statements along the lines of what you think he should say? What could be holding him back, do you think?
Well, it's a sensitive relationship. Certainly there's the controversy over the South China Sea, and that's been something that the United States has been very concerned about. President Xi is very sensitive to criticism, seems quite defensive. You know, obviously these are sensitive issues, but that's why we think raising these issues in coalition with other countries and making it clear that economic cooperation is dependent upon meeting certain standards of human rights and meeting certain standards of international law is very important.
Daphne Evyatar of Human Rights First speaking to Michael Lippin. For more of that conversation, including what Evyatar thinks of China's habit of responding to foreign criticism by pointing out human rights problems in other countries, you can check out Michael's VOA China 360 podcast on our website at voanews.com. Well, it's time now for us to take a look at what's trending in social media with International Edition's Lori London. I think this is the first time, Lori, we've ever been in the studio together live.
It is. It's our inaugural...
Wow. Well, welcome.
Thank you.
What are people talking about, Lori?
Well, Jim, as Florida gears up for their first big hurricane to make landfall in 11 years on none other than a holiday weekend. Hashtag Hurricane Hermine is trending on Twitter. Now, the NASA Space Agency says Hurricane Hermine, spotted from space, shows the storm blanketing the entire state of Florida. Mm. Now, someone with the handle Narcasm writes, why almost name a storm after a Harry Potter character? That's like naming it Hurricane Voldort, referring to Hermione or Voldemort in the popular series. Mm. And then we've got a little sarcasm from Melissa in Jax, meaning Jacksonville, Florida. She writes, it's now hashtag Hurricane Hermine. You may all now officially start freaking out.
Well, maybe if we get to the V's in the names, we'll get to Voldort. But is there anything else interesting going on in Twitter?
Yeah, well, actually, a Twitter war of sorts between Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump and Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto following his brief visit there on Wednesday. Now, for some background, at a news conference after their meeting, Trump was asked if he spoke to Peña Nieto about paying for that wall, and Trump said no, they'd not discussed it. Then later in the evening, in a big speech on immigration in Arizona, Trump said, we're building a wall, and Mexico's going to pay for it. And then he said it again, they don't know it yet, but they will pay for it. And he tweeted it, Mexico will pay for the wall. Well, after the speech, the Mexican president responded in a tweet. And this is translated, by the way. He said it in Spanish. At the beginning of the conversation with Mr. Trump, I clearly stated that we will not pay for the wall. Now, the publication at the Daily Beast tweeted, that was fast. Donald Trump and Enrique Peña Nieto are officially feuding on Twitter. Mexican leader's been getting a lot of backlash for even meeting with Trump from his citizens, given some of the comments Trump has made. So Peña Nieto tweeted in Spanish, why did I get together with Donald Trump? And then Trump, of course, doubles down, saying Mexico will pay for the wall 100%. Peña Nieto then tweeting, I repeat what I said personally to Mr. Trump, Mexico will never pay for the wall.
Wow, so interesting. Very interesting
looks
stuff.
Like the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Indeed. Well, we had a great friendship here. Thanks for the analysis, Lori. You may follow her on Twitter at Lori London, L-U-N-D-I-N is the spelling, and myself at VOA Stevenson. Also follow our International Edition stream at VOA underscore IE. Among the top stories that are trending in Asia, Australia outlines tough new measures against Islamic State. China seen as its own obstacle to G20 innovation ambitions. U.S. rebalance uncertain as Obama heads to Asia Pacific. Pakistan says Afghan apology prompted reopening of busy border crossing. Indonesia screens for Zika as Singapore infections mount. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more at the voanews.com website. And if you have a smartphone, check it all out on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. New Brazilian President Michel Temer has appealed for national unity in the wake of Wednesday's Senate conviction of his impeached and suspended predecessor, Dilma Rousseff.
Assumo a presidência do Brasil após decisão democrática.
Mr. Temer, in a national address, described the congressional action as transparent and democratic. He called it a moment of hope to reclaim confidence in Brazil. The Senate vote of 61 to 20 ended the presidency of the country's first female leader, who was convicted of violating budgetary laws to enhance her 2014 re-election prospects, as well as 13 years of leftist Workers' Party rule. It also puts into jeopardy some of the social welfare programs, which Rousseff argued have lifted millions out of poverty. Mark Jones is a Latin American expert at Rice University in Houston, Texas, and he tells VOA's Victor Beatty, despite Mr. Temer's lofty rhetoric, the nation is deeply divided, mired in recession, and facing a host of challenges.
First, the Brazilian economy is deep in the doldrums. Second, many on the left believe that this was an undemocratic pseudo-coup and are unlikely to accept Temer as the country's legitimate president, engaging in protests and generally trying to obstruct his government's process. And perhaps most seriously is that there's a cloud of corruption hanging over the Temer government, several accusations of direct corruption by Temer himself, and half of his cabinet facing legal charges presently.
Were you surprised by the lopsided vote, 61-20, to remove Ms. Rousseff from office permanently?
Not all that surprised. We knew that there was going to be support for her in the PT. But I think what generally happened is once many Brazilian politicians who were on the fence saw that it was going to be a clear-cut impeachment, they wanted to be in the good graces of the government in order to receive financial benefits or political benefits. And that could be bridges in their and roads in their states or jobs for their supporters. And so once it was pretty clear that the president was going to be impeached, many of the senators started to move to the government's side. And thus, very few people who were on the fence, say, 6 to 8 weeks ago, shifted for the president, and pretty much all of them went on the impeachment side for the vote.
But the Senate also voted more narrowly to allow Ms. Rousseff to retain the right to hold public office. Could she run again?
I don't think we'll be seeing her at least running for president any time in the future. She could always run for Senate, replicating President Fernando Collor de Mello, who was impeached back in the 90s, but then returned later to run and be elected a senator. He, though, was prohibited from holding public office for a period of time.
Mr. Temer faces a number of challenges. As you indicated, he's going to be in office at least through 2018. He has an agenda that includes privatization and reforms. This will go against 13 years of Worker Party rule. How likely is this going to play out?
Well, he should be able to get much of these reforms passed, in part because the Brazilian system is very open to negotiation. And one thing that we do know about President Temer is that he's an expert negotiator. He honed his skills as Speaker of the Brazilian lower house. And so one place where he does really shine compared to President Rousseff is that he knows how to negotiate and get things done. She was always criticized for being overly autocratic and overly sensitive and too willing to cut people off and not sit down and negotiate. Temer is all the opposite.
Mark Jones called Mr. Temer a dealmaker prepared to make substantial compromises to get things done, and he called the charges against Rousseff comparatively minor. He said they did not involve personal enrichment or massive bribes, but she was held to account for the rampant corruption surrounding her party. A powerful earthquake struck off of the coast of New Zealand. There are no immediate reports of damage or injuries, but the U.S. Geological Survey said it was a 7.1 magnitude quake that hit early Friday, 169 kilometers northeast of Gisborne. It had a depth of 30 kilometers. The Pacific Tsunami Warning Center in Hawaii said that no tsunami of significant strength is expected. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump left little doubt about his tough stand on illegal immigration during a speech in Arizona Wednesday. Some moderate Republicans had hoped for a softening of Trump's immigration position, which polls have shown has hurt him with minority voters. But Trump appears to be doubling down on his vow to protect the U.S. border with Mexico, as we hear from VOA national correspondent Jim Malone in Washington.
For Donald Trump, a renewed, aggressive focus on his key issue of stopping illegal immigration at a time when some Republicans were looking for a softer tone.
For those here illegally today who are seeking legal status, they will have one route and one route only, to return home and apply for reentry like everybody else, we will break the cycle of amnesty and illegal immigration. We will break the cycle.
Trump unveiled a 10-point immigration plan aimed at stopping illegal entry and deporting criminal elements. He repeated his vow that Mexico will pay for a new wall along the southern border. Trump's tone during the speech was noticeably tougher than it was hours earlier after a meeting with Mexico's President Enrique Peña Nieto. Democratic candidate Hillary Clinton continues to hammer away at Trump's temperament and warns voters about Trump's efforts to moderate his image.
And now Trump is trying to rebrand himself as well. But don't be fooled. There's an old Mexican proverb that says, "Tell me with whom you walk, and I will tell you who you are." But we know who Trump is.
Clinton continues to lead Trump in national and key state polls, and Trump is finding it difficult to broaden his base of support beyond Republican primary voters, says Georgetown University analyst Stephen Wayne.
Because he appealed to an angry segment, a segment of the Republican Party, which is not necessarily the country as a whole. This general election seems to be a referendum for or against Trump. And he won it in the primaries, and he's losing it in the general election because of the very appeals he made in the primaries.
But some recent polls show the race tightening, in part because many voters do not trust Clinton, says Professor Jeremy Mayer.
Hillary Clinton has massive flaws, and had the Republicans nominated a typical Republican, not a Reagan too, but just your average politician, it'd probably be neck and neck right now, given her vulnerabilities.
With 2 months to go until the election, the next major test for both candidates will be the presidential debates, which begin later this month. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
And please visit voanews.com for much more on this story. In fact, you can even see video that goes with Jim Malone's report. And be sure to follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE and like us on Facebook at VOA Now as we follow U.S. presidential politics all the way up to the November general election. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
The political party convention is a critical part of the American electoral process. VOA correspondents are there, reporting the latest developments.
Kane Fairbaugh, VOA News, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Jim Malone, VOA News, at the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia.
Tune in to VOA's extensive, up-to-the-minute coverage of the U.S. presidential election.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
This is VOA's International Edition. Singer Chris Brown is in trouble with the law again, this time for allegedly pointing a gun at a woman at a party in his Tarzana home. International Edition's David Byrd spoke with VOA Soul Lounge host Shauna Renee about the incident, which has cost Brown $250,000 bail, but is not as clear-cut as some might think.
He was having a party. He had some folks over, and apparently two young ladies showed up uninvited. Bailey Karam was one of these young ladies. She's the regional California beauty contestant. And she says that another one of his friends pulled out jewelry. I guess they were selling jewelry, and she happened to walk by and pointed at a piece and said, "Hey, that was really nice." And I guess that upset the man who was showing the jewelry, a couple of the other gentlemen that were in the house, and Chris lost it, she alleges. Again, he pointed the gun. She ran out, and immediately after running out of the house, she called police. and they brought what looked like a quarter of the force to Chris Brown's home, which is in a very sort of ritzy, rich, affluent neighborhood in Hollywood, and attempted to get in, and Chris would not let them in because they did not have a search warrant, which I think is important to say is well within his right.
Under the Fourth Amendment of the United States Constitution, illegal search and seizure is not allowed. If the police want to search your crib, they have to have a warrant that says why they're searching it and what they're looking for.
Right. And what was also very interesting was that while what the media was calling a standoff was going on, Chris Brown was inside releasing Instagram videos, social media videos, and sort of explaining his side of the story. And his side of the story was, they're always bothering me. They won't let me live. I didn't do anything. I'm not going to let them in until I get a warrant. And later on, that eventually happened, and they arrested him. And $250,000 is what it cost him in bail to be released. And right now, Bailey Caron has yet to file charges. She has, however, spoken to quite a few media outlets, including TMZ, to tell her side of the story. And as a result, they started to dig within her past, and her credibility is being called into question because in 2014, she was involved in a grand theft larceny case in New York City where she was accused of stealing a handbag, money, and a wallet.
Part of this, though, is Chris Brown has a reputation. This is not his first dust-up with law enforcement.
Absolutely. And I would think part of what would make one hope that he wasn't involved with something like this also is the fact that he has that reputation. Now, some folks were asking, as we were reporting it on VOA 1, whether or not this would violate his probation, because he was on probation for many years for the abuse of Rihanna. He is no longer on probation. So this will be a separate case. And Chris Brown actually spent some time in jail because he continued to violate that probation. So, though that will not be called into question when this whole thing goes to court and he's arraigned, as you say, I mean, when you have a history of violence against women, it doesn't look very good for you. Let's just say that.
And what did Chris do about all this? Well, other than delete the Instagram posts of his videos, he dropped some new music in putting it on SoundCloud called What Would You Do? To follow Shauna on Twitter, she is at VOA Lady DJ, and you can also check her out at the Soul Lounge on our website. That's voanews.com. And you can send her a tweet by sending it to at VOA1 The Hits.
You've been listening to International Edition. Our director is Tracy Carter, and our engineer is Dan Crafton. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Thank you so much for joining us, and we hope you have a wonderful day ahead.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is gravely concerned about specific accusations of abuse and torture that were made during the trial of 23 persons arrested following June 29th riots in Nouakchott, the capital of Mauritania. The arrests followed a protest against eviction by residents of a squatter camp in the capital, many of whom are former slaves. The protest turned violent when demonstrators threw stones and burned a police bus. 9 police and other Mauritanian citizens were injured. The United States condemns the serious injuries and associated property damage. The United States is concerned with reports of coerced confessions or statements obtained through torture, raising serious concerns as to whether each accused individual received a fair trial. The U.S. will closely follow an anticipated appeal process. Among those sentenced are 13 members of the Resurgence of Abolitionist Movement, an organization championing the anti-slavery movement in Mauritania. Mauritania was the last country in the world to officially abolish slavery in 1981. Nevertheless, slavery continues in the West African nation, where an estimated 4 to 20% of Mauritania's 3.5 million people are enslaved. The United States urges an immediate and comprehensive investigation into all credible allegations of torture, public release of findings of this investigation, and appropriate prosecution of any individuals whom the investigation finds were responsible for such acts. Mauritania enshrined its commitment against torture by characterizing it as a crime against humanity in the 2012 revision of the Mauritanian Constitution, and in April of this year established in law the National Mechanism for the Prevention of Torture, which has been partially staffed but not fully funded. The United States strongly encourages Mauritania to respect human rights and fundamental freedoms, including freedoms of expression and association for all Mauritanians. The U.S. supports fair trial guarantees, transparent and credible judicial processes, and respect for the human rights of all individuals.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.